Thank you, Jonga, and a blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, October 21st, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gandhi.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The politicization of food is gaining traction across the country, with opposition members being told to support ZANU-PF or starve.
We are just told that every Zimbabwean is going to be able to get food. But when we notice people being excluded, it is quite concerning.
Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa tells Parliament the agricultural equipment being distributed by the First Lady was sourced by the government.
And lawmakers win the battle for Harare to raise the age of consent from 12 to 16 years, though 18, according to them, would have been perfect.
This
the challenge that you raise is that if one is low for sexual intercourse with a young person, he then wants to start the crime of having sexual intercourse with a young person. But if that girl is near the age of 12, the fall of the legal provision of that such a person is incapable of giving consent.
These and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
The politicization of food aid is gaining traction across the country, with opposition members being told to support ZANU-PF or starve. That from the Zimbabwe Peace Project, which also notes in its September report that, quote, political intolerance has reached fever pitch levels across the country. Squabbling in ZANU-PF and the MDCT is also continuing, the Peace Project said. Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo reached ZPP Director Justina Mukoko for more.
One family going hungry is one family too many. And I think what we have had and had several times is that there is no citizen of this country who is going to go hungry. And when that statement is said, there are no issues in terms of affiliation or any other discriminatory form that are advanced. We are just told that every Zimbabwean is going to be able to get food if they are in a difficult situation. But when we notice people being excluded on the point of view that they belong to a particular party or they belong to a particular faction, I think it is quite concerning.
So where is this food coming from? Is it from the government, ZANU-PF, NGOs?
I think it's all mixed at the moment in terms of where this food is coming from. But I think you will also know that there is a lot of food that is being distributed at ZANU-PF rallies. We are not really clear in terms of the source of that food. There was some rice that was coming into the country. I'm not sure if that rice was actually ring-fenced in terms of only targeting supporters of one political party. It was rice that was donated to Zimbabweans at large.
Zimbabwe Peace Project Director Justina Mukoko on the line with reporter Ntungamili Nkomo from Harare. ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo was not available for comment, but Pali officials have previously denied charges of politicizing food.
Meanwhile, Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa admitted in Parliament today that the agriculture equipment being distributed by First Lady Grace Mugabe during her rallies across the country is part of the $98 million Brazil-Zimbabwe Food for Africa loan facility. Responding to questions from lawmakers, Mnangagwa said the First Lady was not making donations but merely handing over equipment that had been sourced by the government. Ivan Chifera reports from Harare.
Cornered by lawmakers in parliament today as to why the first lady was getting involved in government business, Mnangagwa failed to explain this one out, but could only say Ms. Mugabe is just distributing the equipment after her rallies together with the Minister of Agriculture. But Ms. Mugabe, during her last two rallies in Chisumbanje and Rushinga, gave the impression that she was the one who had sourced the equipment, which includes tractors, disc harrows, planters, fertilizer spreaders, among others. Opposition lawmakers were concerned that the equipment was being distributed to ZANU-PF supporters, yet the country's taxpayers would repay the loan. Meanwhile, hundreds of city residents are flocking to the city center, where pharmaceutical students from the University of Zimbabwe and the Harare Institute of Technology are conducting free tests for some of the conditions associated with non-communicable diseases, such as high blood pressure and blood sugar levels and body mass index, as a way of promoting health living among the population under the banner of the Zimbabwe Pharmaceutical Students Association. Association Public Relations Officer Anes Hiwayo told Studio 7 during the free tests that are being done in Harare's First Street that they decided to carry out the exercise after realizing that more than 60% of deaths in sub-Saharan Africa are now due to non-communicable diseases. She says the whole exercise is intended to promote a health living by raising awareness about the dangers of these conditions.
We are talking about how can we improve our lifestyles by living healthy. So many people don't know. They come into town, they don't even know that their blood pressure is very high or they have blood sugar in their body. So we are raising awareness to the public, to the general public, and we are saying, come, it's for free. We are giving back to you guys, to the society, so that you know how healthy you have been living.
Hiwayo said the turnout has been impressive as people are keen to know what their status is.
So you realize people, when it comes to health these days, they are very conscious. They want to know where they are. No one wants to die. I mean, everyone is scared of dying. So whenever they hear that there is a public campaign in terms of health, everyone wants to come in numbers. And we have managed to cover a wide range of people.
A city resident who was queuing for the tests told Studio 7 he was unable to do regular checks at the local clinic as the charges are exorbitant. He says he was aware that non-communicable diseases were now responsible for many deaths in the country. Another city resident who only identified herself as Enia told Studio 7 she was excited, as in her own words, everything was okay.
I got tested. They checked my body mass index, it was okay. I just wanted to know if I've got sugar, BP, but everything was okay. I feel good. I've been advised that I should keep the figures, I should be exercising and eating a healthy food.
She said she was excited. The advice she got from the students was excellent and what she always got from medical experts.
I think I've been aware of not eating too much starch, like starch. I only get a little bit. Potatoes, I keep away from those. Although I eat sometimes like chicken in, but once in a while, not every time.
After going through the tests, residents, regardless of the outcomes of the tests, are counseled and referred to their doctors or health institutions for the required attention. Maswingo Central lawmaker Edmund Mere, who visited the testing center, advised the pharmaceutical students to also carry out such tests at Parliament and other places, as most people are in need of such services. The tests by the students were funded by the two tertiary institutions as well as several private pharmacies in and around the country. As the non-communicable diseases are taking their toll on the country, some pharmacies in the country are now carrying out free blood sugar tests, and testing kits are now on sale in public pharmacies. These diseases are not infectious, the so-called non-communicable diseases, or NCDs. Almost two-thirds of all deaths in the developing world, about 23 million each year, are affected by the NCDs. For Zimbabwe, 30% of all deaths are caused by NCDs, which generally have received less attention in the health sector, though solutions are often very effective and very cheap. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
I am Blessing Zulu. This week and the following one, I'll be bringing you a range of interviews from ZANU-PF and Zimbabwe's opposition parties on their solutions to the country's economic and political crisis. Today, we feature Egypt Zinemu Nenja of the African National Party, and tomorrow we will feature Elton Mangoma of the Renewal Democrats of Zimbabwe. Don't miss this very important series.
Former Energy Minister and the interim leader of the Renewal Democrats of Zimbabwe opposition party, Elton Mangoma, says he must be commended for exposing the scandal at ZESA, where President Robert Mugabe, cabinet ministers and members of parliament were not paying their private electricity bills. President Robert Mugabe and his wife, Grace, for example, owed over $345,000 to ZESA as at December 31st, 2011. ZESA insiders, though, say the first family is settling its huge bill. Mangoma, who is set to be elected unopposed as the president of RDZ at his party's Congress Friday, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu he believes is the right man to take over from Mr. Mugabe come 2018.
The economic problems are being as a result of the cumulative errors made by ZANU-PF. And Mangoma's presidency, or RDZ, coming in, would make sure that the corruption that is there is stopped. Our ideology is that of modern nationalism, which of necessity means that the people of Zimbabwe must enjoy the resources that are in the country.
But does RDZ have any blueprints to synthesize your ideas or in as far as the economy is concerned?
We do have a blueprint. We have got our policy position on some of the key policy areas. But we also recognize that you can go to some detail which nobody actually understands. So we have got policy position we have got, which we are debating it amongst ourselves. We have got our Congress, and it is at the Congress that our members generally will now adopt it.
There's an energy crisis right now. What are some of the problems that you see as causing this serious crisis in the country in terms of energy?
Well, ZANU-PF has never invested in energy for the last 35 years. And any capacity generation increase that we have seen has actually been put in under my watch as Minister of Energy. So we started bringing in the small thermals. We also started, we put in the tenders for Kariba extension and Wange extension. Unfortunately, Kariba extension has been allowed to go through. Wange extension was stalled.
But your critics, Mr. Mangoma, will also say you did not crack down on some senior government officials who were using electricity, especially their farms, without paying for it.
In fact, people only knew that because of me, because of when I was there. That's when actually people knew members and government were not paying. And what people must know is that during that time, government officials and ministers started paying for their electricity. I cannot say whether they have continued to pay since I left.
There are some who are saying without forming a coalition, opposition parties will not be able to take advantage of the problems in ZANU-PF. Are you for a grand coalition?
I must say that that is a false argument. It is a false argument to say a grand coalition is the answer to the problems of Zimbabwe.
So essentially, you are saying you are not going to work with other opposition parties to topple Mr. Mugabe, if I'm getting that right.
No, I'm not saying that. What we do is right now we are working as RDZ to be able to form our structures and make sure that people fully understand who we are and what we stand for. And when we stand and talk to anybody, we would have our own home. We'll have our own strong party. And then we will decide who we can talk to. Obviously, the people we can combine with and easily combine with are people who they've got the same values and principles that we have got, it will become a lot easier for us to be able to talk to them. But at this stage, we have got difficulty in working with an outfit, whether it's an outfit or it will be in future, called People First. So we rule out working with People First at this stage, because when people were being killed, when houses were being burned, when livestock was being eaten, they were part of ZANU-PF.
That was interim leader of the opposition Renewal Democrats of Zimbabwe, Elton Mangoma, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Parliamentarians are celebrating after winning the fight to push the age of consent in the country from 12 to 16 years. Lawmakers wanted the government to increase the age to 18 years, but MDCT Chief Whip Innocent Gonese says Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, representing the government in parliament, refused. Section 65 of the Criminal Law Codification Act states that if a girl between the ages of 12 and 16 consents to sex, her partner will not be charged with rape. Gonese says that is what they want changed. Constitutionally, the age of consent is 16, while the age of consent to marriage is 18. Gonese tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri the next step now is to set into motion the process to amend the law in parliament.
Let me just clarify. In terms of Section 70 of the Criminal Codification Law and Reform Act, the challenge that you raise is that any young person is defined as someone who is below the age of 16. The distinction is that if one has lawful sexual intercourse with a young person, you then one can start the crime of having sexual intercourse with a young person. But if that girl is below the age of 12, the legal provision was that such a person is incapable of giving consent. So it is not matter, and I want to not come up with it, say that there was consent. So the debate that we had initially, we wanted that person was 18. However, the vice president was not amenable to that argument, but he was agreeable to the amendment of the age of consent in the sense that if someone now is an open sexual intercourse with anyone below the age of 16, that person will then be deemed to be incapable of giving any consent.
And now that this has passed in the National Assembly, what's the next step?
The next step is for it to go to the Senate. After that, it is to go to the President for assent.
That was MDCT Parliamentary Chief Whip Innocent Gonese in Harare with reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, find us at www.studio7news.com.
You can also text us at 001-202-465-0318.
Coming up,
a young Zimbabwean girl breaks barriers in trucking and piloting. But first, a look at regional and international news.
The Texas teen arrested for bringing a homemade Glock to school that was mistaken for a bomb is moving to Qatar, according to his family. Ahmed Mohammed's family released a statement yesterday saying they had accepted an offer from the Qatar Foundation for Education, Science and Community Development to pay for his secondary and undergraduate education in the capital, Doha.
The statement said the family has been overwhelmed by many offers of support. The 14-year-old recently visited the country as part of a whirlwind month that included a Monday visit to the White House, where he joined students, scientists, astronauts, and celebrities for Astronomy Night. Sudanese state radio reported that his father, a Sudanese emigrant, also took him to meet Sudan President Omar al-Bashir.
And China and Britain are to sign billions of dollars in business deals as President Xi Jinping meets Prime Minister David Cameron during the second day of the Chinese leader's visit to Britain. The leaders are expected to formally announce a major deal that will see Chinese investors finance a third of the cost of the Hinkley Point C nuclear plant that is to be built by French contractors in southwest England.
The Chinese state-owned National Petroleum Corporation and British oil giant BP are also expected to agree in joint development projects. In total, British officials have said they expect US $46 billion in deals to be rolled out during Xi's four-day visit. In our diaspora segment tonight, I spoke to Amai Sylvia Kuimba on why she decided to trek to the United Kingdom more than a decade ago. I caught up with her on how she also reunited with her son here in Washington, D.C. after so many years. The mother of six and grandmother of 12 says it has not been an easy journey. We hear from her now.
Life needs and also the demands, you know, from family. You know, there were so many pressures that I realized I couldn't really manage and achieve if I kept doing what I was doing in our country, because it wasn't enough to really pay for the fees and look after the family. As it was a large family, I really needed some consistency, because at that time it was a bit difficult, things were changing. I realized that the remuneration or the amount I was getting was no more enough to support them in school. Then I decided I should really supplement. I should find a more rewarding situation, work situation, that will help my family.
How many children did you still have at that particular time who were of school-going age? And would you say that your sacrifice has paid off in retrospect?
Actually, I had three. One was actually quite an adult, but finished a course in Bulawayo, that's a hotel management and tourism. It wasn't possible anymore for her to get a job, because the jobs were few and situations were a bit tough. But in real school situation, I still had two. One at the convent in secondary, and one at St. George's, also in the secondary, doing upper level, A level. So I realized that my journey was still very strong, and my journey was still long, and it needed very heavy support and a strong decision.
How challenging was it for you to live your life in Zimbabwe? You were married to one of the renowned authors in Zimbabwe, Giles Kuimba, and also you had a life that you had but decided at that point in time to leave and go to the UK. How easy a decision was it for you?
It wasn't anymore, because at that same time, you know, you see, sometimes when a dynasty starts falling, a lot of things start falling apart. At the same time also, our relationship, my marriage, was a bit shaky, and it was quite a big challenge. And I realized I couldn't have just come and start, you know, exploring on what I could do, where I could get a job to work for my children, and leave them behind. Actually, I took the family with me. I started encouraging them. I started moving them out so that as they begin settling here in schools, then I'll come and really do some good and hard work for them. So it really needed good planning. It needed patience. It needed, you know, just a very fresh and a clear mind. I needed to really use all my resources to be very clear, conscious of what I was doing, and to stick to my plan and to be stable in it and to keep focused on what I was looking into.
Fast forward to now, where are you in terms of your marriage? You mentioned that you had a shaky relationship with your husband.
Actually, finally, we separated. We never got divorced, but we separated, and he, too, is also in the diaspora, and he's okay, he's happy, and he found a partner. but everyone is comfortable with it. And children in touch with them, and everything is okay. I never took any bitterness or any grudge about it. So it helped me then, because when you do that, God always is on your side, and God always comes to your rescue.
If there are some other parents that are listening out there, especially single mothers, what words of encouragement would you have for them, those that are in the diaspora and are also trying to make a living for their children that they are separated from for a long time?
Oh, the important thing is remain focused and keep thinking positively and work with God to intervene in your situation, and keep advising your children, or try to keep your children under good advice and under the umbrella of God's word, and also keep focused and keep on. Your day will come, but you've got to make sure that you are checking all the time and keeping track on what's going on.
That was Amai Sylvia Kuimba in the United Kingdom.
A Zimbabwean-born development expert, Kutula Machazi, has won an election in the land of the Inuit in Iqaluit, the largest city and capital of the Canadian territory of Nunavut, in the national elections that have been won by the opposition in a landslide. He speaks to Studio 7's Gibbs Dube about his election.
I came number 5 out of 9 contestants, and I got 1,189 votes, and the top person got 1,333, which means that I have been elected as a city councillor for the city of Iqaluit.
So how do you feel about this?
I feel very good about it. I'm happy that I'm going to be representing the interests of the residents. I want to advance their agenda and make sure that whatever they say, I'll take it to council, and we make sure that their voices are heard and their problems are solved.
Now, as a person with the Zimbabwean roots, what can you tell Zimbabweans about this victory?
You can dream and aspire and be what you want to be. It also shows that you can sell your dream and people can believe in you. And I urge a lot of our aspiring public servants to go out there and also sell their messages, and if they do sell their messages effectively, they can be able to be voted into power. And when they get into office, they should use that opportunity to further the interests of residents.
That was Kutula Machazi, a Zimbabwean-born development expert, speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Iqaluit, Canada. Remember the story we promised you about this young Zimbabwean woman who has broken into male-dominated trades. Unfortunately, time is not on our side, so we'll play that for tomorrow. That's the music there of Amai Suluma with the Paye Paye. And now to recap today's top stories.
The politicization of food is gaining traction across the country, with opposition members being told to support ZANU-PF or starve.
Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa tells Parliament the agricultural equipment being distributed by the First Lady was sourced by the government.
And lawmakers win the battle for Harare to raise the age of consent from 12 to 16 years, though 18, according to them, would have been perfect.
That's our broadcast this evening.
This is Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye saying good night.
Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntungamili Nkomo. This is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.